Well, I live here in the spot for River Island. So many choices up there. Buyers can get what they want, a single-story or two-story homes, three bedrooms all the way up to seven bedrooms, 11 lakes at River Island. So if you like rowing, kayaking, or paddleboarding, you can get out on a neighborhood lake within minutes of your home. And Ron Wotus says he's going to get me out kayaking. I said, I want to play bocce ball with you first. We'll do that, so... That is River Islands. Andy Baggerly joins us of The Athletic. Andy, how are you?
Marty, don't throw your bocce ball in the lake because it's going to sink.
It
it's not going to float.
Thank you very much.
The game
much.
Will be over.
Thank you. But have you kayaked before?
I have. I've actually kayaked in a lot of fun places. And one place in Arizona, if you're going to make a vacation, you want to do the Grand Canyon. A few years ago, we went up and we kayaked on Lake Powell. Mm-hmm. And it was beautiful because you get in these little arms of the canyon and the water will recede and you pull your kayak up on the sand. And then you can walk around through these slot canyons where just little bits of light are coming through. And the sandstone is this just rich red-orange color. And it's just all the wave action has sculpted it. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful place and very low traffic. There's not a lot of tourists there, so I highly recommend that.
Yeah, kayaking. The last time I did it was in Miami, I think North Miami, Reynolds Park or something. Mm-hmm. We went out in kayaks.
But... Yeah, we've kayaked in New Zealand. I've kayaked in the Channel Islands off Santa Barbara. Let's see, where else? All over New Zealand.
Really?
I've kayaked.
Very good.
Lots of different places.
Very good.
National parks. We were in Maine, I think, in October, and it was just the very end of the season, so we were able to get in a kayak. So, yeah, it's a great way to see a city or see a place. I'll tell you one other place I've kayaked is you can rent the kayaks right from just beyond the center field wall at PNC Park in Pittsburgh. And the rivers, you can kayak on all three of the three rivers, and there's not a whole lot of shipping traffic and everything. It's very safe. And it's a cool way to see the city, a very different perspective.
Have you met McCovey Cove, Dave?
I have met McCovey Cove, Dave. I'll tell you what, I've never actually been on a kayak in McCovey Cove. I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah. He invites people out, and you can kayak over to McCovey Cove from wherever they start.
Oh, that sounds fun. I'd like
cool.
to do that.
Well, River Islands has it, so kayaking in River Islands.
Bring your life preserver, right. Bring your life jacket, make sure it's properly buckled in. And
Ron Wotus and I are going to do it. Hey, great to have Andy with us, Extra Bags on Twitter. You wrote a story yesterday, and I compliment your work as always, but this one really got to me, and it was sort of analyzing the Giants vis-a-vis some analytics that made very easy sense to me. And maybe you could review that a little bit for the fans, because I thought it was really a good article.
Well, yeah, and when we talk about analytics, I think a lot of times we start talking about stats that you don't really know. How do they formulate that? You know, how do you get WRC+? How do you get OPS+? Or a lot of these, PECOTA and a lot of the predictive things, or, you know, win shares. What does that all mean? But here's a really simple one that is very, very predictive for success of teams, and it's strikeout-to-walk ratio. Very simply, how often do you strike out versus how often do you draw a walk? And this is for pitchers and for hitters. And if you go through and you look at what the major league average was, it was about 2.62 strikeouts per walk in the major leagues. And the teams that perform better than that average on both the pitching and the hitting side. There are eight of those teams. All eight of them had winning records. You had four of the six division winners. You had the Yankees, who were a 100-win wild card team. They won 93.5 games. You got the Rays. The Rays won 90 games. They didn't make the playoffs, but they were great on both the pitching and hitting side. And this is one of the things that the Giants looked at and Farhan Zaidi looked at. The Giants had the worst strikeout-to-walk ratio in the National League last year.
Wow.
Fewest walks, third most strikeouts. Now, we know that they need more power. We know that they were 1-18 in hitter parks in the National League. We're talking Coors Field, Philadelphia,
Milwaukee,
and Cincinnati. They went 1-18 in those parks. So you realize they're non-competitive offensively, and they got to have more power. But for now, while it's harder to get the power hitters, one thing they know will play at home and on the road is controlling the strike zone better, and that's been a big-time target in the players that they've gone after or that they've signed. It's why they were in on Bryce Harper. It's why they weren't in on Adam Jones. So, you know, that kind of helps you understand, you know, what's the driving force here in the players that they're looking at to fill in, whether they're depth players or whether they're players who could play a big role in this club. And it's going to govern, I think, go a long way to figuring out who they target, maybe even toward the end of the spring, who they might be able to get in a deal.
Great analysis. Strikeout-to-walk ratio, 2.6 for a hitter or a pitcher. that's the number that you want to look at.
Yeah, and it also explains why they tendered a contract to Joe Panik when maybe, you know, you wonder, hey, sure, is this guy really going to be worth the $4 million or so he's going to make? You know, even when he's struggled, he doesn't strike out. And I think they realize that there's value in that. That's an underappreciated skill. And so they see him as a good bounce-back candidate because of that.
Andy Baggerly with us. Absolutely. Read him in The Athletic. It is so worth it for everything that you put out, Andy. It's really, really
worth it.
Thanks,
Marty.
No, it is.
That.
As soon as you went there, I subscribed. Now I'm paying the full price. Before I was like $3. Now I'm up to the full price.
Well, we got Jason Stark writing for us now. So I always tell people, just subscribe for Jason Stark and you get the rest of us for free.
Yeah, it's good.
It'll be worth it that way.
No, it's good. I really enjoy it. All right, let's put this into some practice here. Outfield. Where does this outfield go? Farhan, and I pressed him a little bit last week. I said, look, you did say you're getting another outfielder. Are you going to do it? So where does this outfield go? Because everything else is pretty well set on this team.
Yeah, I think they will be disciplined, and if they don't get the kind of player that they want for the return that they think is fair value, then I think they would go into the season with what they had. And they know that would be unpopular. The way that the outfielders who are on the bubble have performed this spring would even make that more unpopular because nobody is really reaching out and grabbing these jobs. You know, I really thought that a Henry Ramos and Anthony Garcia, some of these non-roster guys, somebody would surprise. And, you know, the spring doesn't mean everything. We've seen Chris Moreros come through and have big springs, and then you see a handful of at-bats and you realize, okay, this isn't going to work. But at least it gives you a little hope for, you know, that they've got a few more things to work with. And we haven't really seen that this spring. Gerardo Parra's had some good at-bats. Cameron Maben is coming around after a really tough start. And I think the biggest positive is that Stephen Duggar looks healthy and he's driving the ball. You know, he's looks very athletic. He looks like he's back from shoulder surgery. That's a huge deal to have a plus defensive center fielder who can lead off. It's been a while since the Giants have had that. So I think that's the big positive, but it's really the only positive so far in the outfield, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's still to be determined what goes on in the outfield. All right, one other thought from the roster. Then I want to go back to one of your columns about the Twins that you wrote about just the other day. There's a lot of pitchers here.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pitchers, and Chris Stratton is one of them. Where does Chris Stratton, give me a 30 days from now, where the heck is Chris Stratton?
You know, I really think, Marty, that they're going to protect as much of their inventory as they possibly can. Because we all know, and we've known this for a long time, the opening day roster, as much as we obsess about it, is not the team that is going to be, you know, on the field, maybe even in 2 weeks, let alone 2 months. You know, and I think the 2010 World Series team is a great example of that. They had Benji Molina catching and Mark DeRosa in left field. And, I mean, that team completely changed over and won the World Series. Now, I'm not saying that the Giants are going to have those same realistic ambitions this year, but, you know, who makes the opening day roster is not as big a deal in the grand scheme of things, even though it is for the players. You know, of course it is. But I think they're going to look to, if you've got an option and you can be optioned in the minor leagues, you better be darn good to be able to make the opening day roster. And so that's why I wasn't surprised when an Austin Slater or a Pat Venditti got optioned already. I think a lot of other guys who have options, like a Ty Block, it'll be tough for him to crack the roster.
Garcia.
Aramis Garcia. He's got an option. So you think, okay, well, then Rene Rivera will probably be the backup catcher. And you realize that those guys will get an opportunity because they will. There's going to be a lot of roster moves this year.
Yeah.
We've seen it with the Dodgers when Farhan was there, and I think we're going to see it with the Giants, especially in this 1 year before they move back up from 10 days to 15 on the DL, or IL, as we're calling it now.
Boy, love having you on. All right, the Twins, the Rogers Twins, you wrote about them?
Yeah. So that story was up a couple days ago, collaboration with our Twins beat writer Dan Hayes, good Bay Area guy, by the way. And he's got one of the Twins, and we've got the other one here. Tyler Rogers, right-hander, extreme sinker ball, knuckle-dragging submarine right-hander. And his identical twin brother, Taylor, is a left-handed reliever from a conventional windup. And he pitches for, of course, the Minnesota Twins. And I didn't realize, Marty, until I really looked at the stats, how good a year this guy had. You know what he did against lefties last year, Taylor Rogers? He allowed 18 hits, a 180 average. Every single one of them was a single.
Huh.
Lefties slugged 180 against him. His last 26 appearances, scoreless. and I think it was like 28 strikeouts and three walks.
Where's he going to be this year?
Oh, he's going. These are main one of their main guys in the bullpen.
And yeah, the Twins.
He totally established them. And Tyler has a two-time AAA All-Star. Folks in Sacramento know him well. We've seen him come up from big league camp to fill out some rosters here in the spring, and he was very nearly called up in September. And a lot of guys privately grumble that he should have been called up last September. So when he does break into the big leagues, assuming he does at some point, they'll be the first set of twins to play concurrently in the major leagues.
Since Eddie O'Brien and Johnny O'Brien.
No, Marty, no. Since Damon Minor and his brother Ryan Minor.
All right.
And they were lefty and righty.
All right.
So there's some sort of twin thing, you know, with the mirror image brain development that they think maybe you end up with a righty and a lefty. It's just kind of freaky when you think about it.
Wow. All right, Eddie and Johnny O'Brien. They were when I grew up. I remember their baseball card. It's the only baseball card with two people on it.
Oh, yeah?
It was great. I loved it.
Do you remember the one that was like a 1982 or 83 Fleer card that had Pete and Repeat? It was Pete Rose and Pete Rose Jr.
I didn't see
and that's
that
what they put it, Pete and Repeat.
I love it. Great having you on very quickly, I know, because you got to go and we got to go. Tomorrow, Kansas City is here. They're going to recreate a little bit of Game 7, maybe?
Well, Bruce Bochy said it occurred to him that he could start the same infield. With now that Pablo Sandoval's back, they could start Pablo at third and Belt at first and Panic and Crawford in the middle infield. And of course, you got Madison Bumgarner on the mound, who didn't start Game 7, but we all remember he finished it. I just think that if they bring Whit Merrifield on the Royals squad, he's going to be getting busted inside with fastballs. No chance Bumgarner leaves anything middle away for him to line back up the middle, because you remember Merrifield was the guy who hit the liner that broke Bumgarner's hand at the end of last spring.
Last day of spring training.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, great having you on, as always. We love catching up with you. Good stuff in The Athletic, @ Extra Bags on Twitter.
Thank you, Marty.
All right, that's Andy Bagley. More coming up right after this.